for the purpose, critique, review, positive vibes, education, the Shiny Squirrel Podcast proudly presents Madonna's Underwear.
It's the Nerdlings Podcast. I'm WC Chronicles, your senior nerdling.
Yep, looking for Madonna's Underwear, Mike.
And we have a guest that I'm so glad that he knows he can join us anytime, Gregor.
Gregor van Kot. Yeah. That's my European Dutch aristocrat name.
So many things to talk about. I called you Gregor because speech to text did that to your name when I sent you the text today. Instead of Greg, it said, oh, it's Gregor.
It's all right. It still has my name is still in there.
So it works. So
yeah.
Look, we got a lot of catching up to do. I'm glad Greg is here because we always have a better than expected podcast when Greg joins us.
Is that ketchup 57 Heinz?
57 barbecue sauce.
There's so many kind of ketchups. Yeah, this is what you do sometimes when you get old, Gregor.
Gregor. Mr. McGregor's garden.
All right, so Greg, how's your summer been? It's been a while since you've been on our podcast.
Oh, it's been very eventful. I've been trying to get a lot of work done. And
move it a little bit.
Oh,
just take a step. There you go.
Okay, you could have just said that out loud.
Well, I got motions I give Mike.
He's trying to marionette me closer to the phone. So, yes, got a lot of work done. Just trying to finance some projects, basically. Just one step at a time.
One step at a time. Mm-hmm. All right, so Jersey, Hollywood Jersey Mike, you went to Madonna's concert here in Vegas. Tell us about it.
In all honesty, I have to, question mark is still up on that one because there was a lot of complaints about her being 2 hours late. And if people Google her, if you Google her, she has a history of going back all the way to Australia to do this. She's a half hour late, an hour late. So is it a pre-Madonna thing? Does she have like maybe some kind of hang-up thing? Or she just don't give a shit? I think she don't give a shit.
But is she Axl Rose late?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, I don't think so. But she's late, though. And people pay $300, $600, $1,000, $2,000 for a ticket. You know, if somebody's paying you to see you, let's say, do masonry work, good money, and you're going to stay late, you're not going to be like, well, I'm going to do it at my pace. Nobody's going to care when the sun goes down and it gets cold. Even though we're indoors, Madonna should have showed up a little earlier. But let's put it this way. This is not the typical Madonna like we were just discussing. It was more like a club venue in the 50s with African-American dancers, stuff about her living in Lisbon, Portuguese. Well, I'll get to that, too.
The island of Lesbos.
And, you know, it gets to the point, it's like, you know, she's talking about her pussy, I'm just going to say it because she did it, and talking about different things.
So that's the point, yeah.
The thing is, it's great, but it's like, am I still a kid or did I grow up?
How do you are you comfortable telling us how much you paid for the ticket?
Yeah, $300. And I was a cheap seat, not up in the top, but up in the second top.
So you weren't sitting up next to the guy with the lights?
No. And I'll tell you what, it was a packed house, so being at the Coliseum in Caesars, it was like a little nuts because they told you to get there 8:30. 9:10 o'clock comes. No Madonna. 10:30. We're coming on. 11 o'clock, she finally gets on.
No opening act.
No opening. Well, I don't know about that. There was like a little calypso music, Portuguese thing going on for like 15 minutes, like acoustically. So it wasn't bad, but the political views, that's her artist right, she said. So you got to go along with giving her the kudos for her right of artistry. But we all don't agree with her thing. Show was good, but not like you would expect.
With her set list, what song did she do that she surprised you that she liked live
from your days? Probably Who's That Girl?
Yeah.
I think she did Like a Virgin. And that's really was it. It was like not Madonna's stuff. The last 3-4 songs she did, which were good, like the old Madonna, you know, like the club type of thing, but she sang I Rise, I Fall, you know, that one, but it's just not the way you would expect to see Madonna. Okay, you're a James Bond fan. Okay?
No. Somehow you connected this to Die Another Day.
Because Madonna was supposed to be a Bond girl at one time, I believe.
But she sang and, you know, had her appearance in the movie, whatever. But here's the thing, though. What do you feel like your iconic guys coming up and stuff? Now they want to make it a female. Not that there's nothing wrong with it.
That's a good point.
How do you take something that you grew up on and they change it drastically, and you want to be cool and politically correct about it, but how are you supposed to feel when things are just like, wow, this isn't the
I'm glad he brought this up, because I remember reading about this and I wanted to discuss this with you.
Turn around, how would you take this? I want to hear your opinion.
Well, I actually think a lot of that was a marketing campaign. Like, in the new movie, there is a female 007, but it's a woman who takes... after James Bond retires, she becomes the new female 007, and she's a black woman, and she was one of the supporting actors in Captain Marvel. So I think they made everybody deliberately freak out over something, kind of like one of those things like, we're going to put it in the Disney vault. Oh no, it's going to be gone forever. No, it's not. They're just going to tell you when they want to like release it. So in this case, I think they did that to make people deliberately mad, and then said, just kidding, we have a character in here who's like the female 007, but we didn't say female James Bond. We said female 007. And now we've made people pay attention to this movie a little bit more, because they did that as like a, for example, Disney does something like that with trailers. They will show you a trailer, like the Aladdin trailer.
Yes.
And they'll show you Will Smith CGI, and he won't look very good. Everybody will get mad. Everybody will start talking about this. Then they'll show the new trailer, the second trailer, and he will look better. And people go, oh, that's not that bad. Suddenly you took their expectations and you made it go rock bottom. So by the time you build them up again, you kind of have them in your grasp, in the palm of your hand, because you were mad, and now you're like, oh, I'm not mad anymore. I'm okay with this.
That is a marketing ploy.
I think it's a marketing ploy.
So when they take, like, the king of shockology, whatever you want to call it, Howard Stern, when he does his crazy stunts, and they do stuff like that, like you say, I think they're trying to bring people back and be like, wow, shock, shock, shock. But Madonna, how much more shocking can she get with things she did? She definitely announced her MDNA line. She says, use my cosmetic line. So she's all about the marketing.
By the way, you look absolutely fresh. Those bags under your eyes are gone.
Thank
you. Using the MDNA
Madonna,
line.
Love you. But the only thing I didn't like, too, not to get into that, was they were asking different things and talking about different things. And then her little daughter she adopted, I think her name is Mamba, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not sure. She said that female, that God is a female. So when you hear different stuff like this, people can believe what they want to believe and stuff, but then you get like, we don't want to hear about your divorces and stuff. Just, you know, we pay you to sing, you do your thing, but I don't know what to say, so I'm not the only one out on this. I was talking to different people in the audience, and people went up to the box office. A couple ladies said, well, I paid $600 for her, blah, 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 you know. Hope she loses her fan base. Well, she already has everything.
What about the merch tables?
I didn't go to them, but I hear they were pretty up there. But I'm not going to spend $50, $100 for T-shirts or books or anything. I did all that already. You know what I'm saying? But what do you take out of something like that when that was the concert show? It's like, huh, do we come to see politically correct views, or did we come here for music? So it's kind of a fire, water situation. That's why I said about the Bond situation, because we have a friend, Scott Hand, that if he knew it was going to be female Bond, he'd probably boycott it the rest of his life and say they change it. No, I don't know his opinion, because I don't know. I'm just going from what I would think. That's why I asked another James Bond expert like yourself. So you think it's all marketing then?
I think it's marketing. I think if they're going to really go a route that's kind of like that, they'll probably do a Marvel Cinematic Universe thing. Like, hey, let's make one of the female characters that's in Bond, we'll give her own movie. Or we'll have like a Felix Leiter movie or a Q movie. That might be really cool, because then you could build up the other characters. Like, somebody talked about a Moneypenny movie at even one point,
wow,
which is kind of interesting. But I mean, you could do that and not alienate anybody, because if I want to talk about something that does alienate people, it's the recent Terminator movie, where they killed John Connor in the first 5 minutes.
Really?
Yeah. Spoiler alert, it really pisses you off, because they took a legacy character, like somebody you grew up with, and then they killed him in 5 minutes just to kind of shock you. And they did it in a way where it supposedly was supposed to get you kind of reeled in, like, you know, like Janet Leigh dying in Psycho. It's one of those things where you're like, wait, what? Janet Leigh was like super famous then. Nobody did that. Or Drew Barrymore dying in the first scene of Scream. Like, it was supposed to be like that, but instead they just kind of made people pissed off. But the thing about Madonna that makes me, is always interesting to me, is I do think she's probably one of those artist that is always trying to figure out how to keep staying like current. And by doing so, she might piss people off. I don't think she cares because she's getting, you know, a little bit older, as we all are. But basically, I mean, if you ask me, she would have been a perfect Bond girl around the time of Dick Tracy. Like, you know, the Timothy Dalton era.
I think she was supposed to be a Bond girl, or she was supposed to do a theme for the movie.
Probably back then, because when she does, like, her erotica album and stuff like that, that's good stuff. But I feel like by the time she started getting the more of the synth stuff for, like, Die Another Day, it started to... Because that's one of my least favorite Bond songs. It's very obnoxious. Song compared to like Garbage is the World is Not Enough, and that's a band called Garbage, and I like that song.
But they're Scottish.
I like Garbage.
They're Scottish.
So yeah, they're the Scots. They gave us Sean Connery, Ewan McGregor, Alan Cumming, and Scrooge McDuck. They're awesome.
And the comedian Billy Connolly.
Oh yeah, I love Billy Connolly. It's very Scottish. So there you go.
So I think you got to have an open mind to people's artistic views and the way they want to do things, and it's just like. And if you choose not to go to a concert for another 25 years, you choose not to go because things have changed. Because Madame X, remember it was all the hype about Madame X? Madame X is all about her. Mm-hmm. Madame X is a mother, she said. Mother, soccer player, a singer, a songwriter, director. She's a freedom fighter. She just does everything, Madame X.
You came away from the concert basically not with a sour taste in your mouth, but kind of an indifferent opinion about the whole thing. I don't know if I will do that again, but I'll think about it.
Like Sour Patch Kids. Remember them things?
Yes.
You heat one or two, it could be down the future, but I don't know about this, you know?
Yeah, I think when Paul McCartney just did his recent tour, actually, for Egypt Station, basically, he was probably late one day, and he actually filmed himself on his phone going down the strip to apologize to basically just, sorry, I'm stuck in traffic. And I think it, because he was going to the T-Mobile Arena, and it was like his apology saying, I'm not deliberately late. I'm like just caught up in traffic. So I think, I mean, that's kind of the lesson with Paul McCartney. He's not somebody that is trying to bring anybody down because he's always lighthearted. He wants everybody to just, you know, be happy and love, you know, the show. And if he does feel bad, like, oh no, there's something that was an unforeseen human factor that showed up. He's going to like give you a good enough explanation and somehow turn it funny. Like when he walked Abbey Road across to get to the Apple studio, I think when he was going to try to go to, you know, old Beatles locations, speaking of Beatles that we're eventually going to talk about, you know, there was like a huge crowd there, and he kind of was not anticipating that that was going to distract him. But of course there's going to be a huge crowd. It's Paul McCartney. So, you know, he's in Liverpool. So basically it's like, uh-oh, you're going to have to kind of go with the tide and just be a little bit more patient because as a fan, you're going to realize that there's a lot of fans out in the way. But Madonna's different because Madonna was in a position to show up probably earlier. Maybe didn't give a good enough legitimate explanation for why she was late because she was Madonna. She just wants to do whatever she wants to do. Whereas, you know, Sir Paul was knighted by the Queen.
Okay. Now that we're also talking about the Beatles, what do you think about this a couple years ago? They said Kanye West gave him such a break, Paul McCartney.
Oh, that was
how
so
about
funny
that controversy?
The people who don't even know who Paul McCartney was.
Yeah.
54-4, I think, was the song with... With the other ladies.
And Rihanna.
And they're like, wow, Kanye just gave this guy the biggest break of his life. He didn't know who he was. It was so funny.
That's probably the dumbest thing I've heard connected to Kanye other than him hanging out with Donald Trump.
Is that the iWest thing or the iGeneration thing? Like they don't know something? They don't look it up? I'm curious about that.
There was something kind of similar, and I could still relate this to the Beatles. Dr. Sleep just came out. And that's the sequel to The Shining. And, of course, The Shining title by Stephen King is based on John Lennon's Shine. So they were talking about how this movie, the critics love it, and I loved it. I think it's a great movie. But they were talking about how this is a sequel to a movie that is almost 40 years old now. And they were arguing, like, for some reason, people remember It, Tim Curry's It, because it has a scary clown. But if you're talking about a movie where Jack Nicholson re-went crazy in a movie from 1980, for some reason the I generation or even millennials are like, what's that movie? And it's kind of like, wait, what are you talking about? It's The Shining. It's so famous. It's by a famous director.
You're bringing up one that flew over the cuckoo's nest. And I got to say.
I love One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
I got to say, okay, at the very end scene where he jumps out the window and he runs across the field, a friend of mine who works at the State Department in Sarah, Morgan, took me there because it's so, this, the movie's 40 years old. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, there's no way I'm going to be able to line up this shot on this. He showed me the where it is, okay? It's all mostly a parking lot now. Some of the trees are still the same in the distance, but you can see the exact same, the line where it is. And the tree where Jack Nicholson grabs onto and climbs out, it is still alive. The tree is still existent, but you cannot go in and get a picture of it because it is in the mental hospital courtyard of there in Salem.
Right, where the patients are.
Yeah, but it still exists. I almost want to take a drone and fly it. Sure of it. So I had to throw that in there about the
film. No, it's all right.
Yeah. Got to throw this in there about it. Now, did you see It growing up on TV?
I did not.
Okay. Remember, it was like the big thing, the 2-3 night event. That was the most awesomest thing. Little clowns getting the little boy to play with his boat. You know, like kids like to play with, you know, by the sewer and stuff. There's the water. But were you disappointed when you found out it was a spider?
That is like 1990s effects. You know, I mean, the guy who directed it, Tommy Lee Wallace, who did Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, he's a good director. I think that was just one of those moments where the Stephen King description suddenly had to, like, show, like, you had to see an effect. Like, oh, he's a spider, or he's whatever he wants to be, really, is what, you know, Pennywise is. You know, he shows up as your worst fear. So if he shows up as a spider, it's clearly because you're afraid of spiders. But, yeah, like, 1990s effects, it doesn't maybe hold up as well as what you can do now. But, of course, that's to me, the real special effect is Tim Curry, because he's an amazing actor. I mean, that voice and him just, you know, Frankenfurter, but sounding not sexy and just saying, you know, I'm the destroyer of worlds. You're just like, oh my god, any little kid who hears that voice is scary. He's even scary in Home Alone 2, where he just shows up and just says, I brought you a pizza. You're like, oh god.
What a spider. Come on. They could have did an alien. They could have did anything else but a spider.
That's,
man,
Stephen King's fault. That's Stephen King. He could have shown up as a cosmic turtle. That was his scary, that was Pennywise's greatest enemy, is the cosmic turtle.
But at least I'm asking the great Greg, the director, movie critic, whatever, your opinion on this. That's what I said, because when you looked at that as a kid, you're like, a spider, really, in the sewer? Why not an anaconda or something, like a friggin' big snake or something, you know?
It was like a big puppet that they had in that scene. I still find the scariest scenes to me are usually when the kids are freaking out, when the balloon pops and blood splatters everywhere, or the sink overflows with blood, or Tim Curry comes out of the drain and, you know, he's just laughing and stuff like that, or his mouth turns into fangs. Well, actually, the scene that is always I remember from that movie is when Olivia Hussey from Romeo and Juliet, she's in the car, and then Tim Curry with his glowing eyes is staring at her, and he's like hypnotizing her, and he says, "Do you want it? Do you want it?" And it's like, that is the fucking creepiest thing for not only a man to say, but a clown to say, hypnotizing a beautiful woman. That is very fucking creepy.
I love that. That's great.
That's Stephen King, you know.
How about the other famous clown, William Gacy?
Oh, geez.
You remember that movie?
You had to go there. Like, there's a funny video about things like that where Bill Hader from SNL had this really funny joke about Lorne Michaels, the creator of SNL, where he did an impression of him because whenever he talks about celebrities, he, like, rubs his face and he doesn't like name dropping. But apparently Bill Hader had this joke where he basically said, what if you took out the famous people's names and you replaced it with serial killers? So he's like doing it's on YouTube. He's doing Lorne Michaels' Bill Hader impression, and he's just like, yeah, I was down at the mall and I was trying to get BTK killer off death row, rubbing his eye, and I went into a restaurant with Jeffrey Dahmer. It's a really good video of that.
Funny.
Now that you're talking about Gacy and talking about people like why can't I think of Ed Gein, and talking about Ted Bundy and stuff like that, let's just start talking about serial killers.
Yes, you are listening to the Nerdlings podcast, and Greg hasn't joined us in a long time. We are going to be doing a Beatles Uniquity podcast. Three songs that Jersey Hollywood Mike picked out, three songs I picked out, two of which are movie songs, which is even better because Greg is here. We can talk about them. Now, we're catching up on stuff here. Now, we're going to talk about Star Trek.
Yay, Star Trek.
Star Trek.
Love Star Trek.
This is on, this would have been 2 weeks ago, 2 days, 2 weeks and 3 days from when the podcast goes live. Me and Hollywood Jersey Mike, we went out to the Valley of Fire, to what's known as Silica Dome. and this is where they filmed the fight scene for Star Trek Generations. What did you think of that movie before we jump into it?
I liked it. I know some people don't like it because of the whole Kirk being crushed by a bridge, but yeah. I've always liked that movie. I thought it was pretty good transition between the original series to the Next Generation. And I love both shows. That's the Gene Roddenberry's genius, is the original series, the Next Generation, and even Andromeda, which is a show with Kevin Sorbo. Highly recommended if you guys haven't seen that. But Star Trek Generations is good because it's I've always liked Malcolm McDowell as the villain.
Yes.
He's a fantastic villain.
Didn't you assistant direct one of those episodes I remember reading in your biography or something?
What? That's a little before my time, man.
No, I'm talking about,
1992 or 4, I believe. I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, I thought you were involved with something with that. Maybe it was a video or something coming to Vegas. I thought you were going to be in with Star Trek. Something I thought I saw on Instagram or something.
No, I don't remember anything remotely like that. The only thing that comes close to that is I knew people that worked on Star Trek The Experience, the old interactive show at the Hilton. Which is now the Westgate. But back when it was the Hilton, they had a Star Trek The Experience thing over there. And I actually have never been to a Star Trek convention, which is
It's
at the Rio, but I haven't gotten around to it. Like, it's just, you want to spend your money wisely, sort of thing.
Yes.
And most people want me to go to Comic-Con or VidCon these days. So I'll
get
on
that.
The big one in San Diego.
So anyway, Jersey Mike and I, we hung with Jersey Mike. We went out with the point of going to visit. We even bought Star Trek pins because we were prepared to. There's a scene in the movie where McDowell confronts Picard and Kirk for the first time. Who the hell are you? And our purpose
Why
was.
Why was he Southern suddenly? What? Malcolm McDowell's British. Who the hell are you? More like that.
It's the grape juice I'm drinking.
Okay, it's the grape juice, yeah.
So anyway, so he goes, who the hell are you? And so we the plan was to film some scenes, but this is the first time that Mike went out there to see it. I knew about it because my cousin told me about it. Mm-hmm. Went up there. If you go to the top, because my purpose was to basically, let me say my part and then you say your part. We get there. It's about 52 degrees, 42 degrees maybe. The wind is blowing. It's very cold. It's very borderline. You don't want to go up there. I go up there. Mike says he's going to hang back a little bit. I get up on top of the rock. I find out where somebody has etched a little Star Trek emblem, the logo from the pin, communicator, on the rock where he's buried. So I take pictures of that. And then I make my way back down. There are a lot of areas where you can find where they are leftover stigmat bolts where they attached all the framework of the trestles and the bridges up there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You can find a lot of those. Mike eventually makes his way up there. By the time he does, I am able to line up one of the rocks that's in the scene with what's in the movie. So I took about 24 screenshots from the movie on my phone, so I'm trying to line them up in all this wind and everything. I haven't posted them yet because it was so windy you couldn't hear me talk, but I got it lined up. This rock that has been there since that time, it's like a 400-pound rock. You're not going to move it. So take it over, Mike. Your turn.
Well, it wasn't as fun as the time we went to Suarez Rocks and you and the guy were fighting over the Gorn Rock.
Gorn Rock?
You and this guy got into a fight type of thing. I'm this, I have a more of a Gorn Rock.
Wait, which Gorn Rock? The one he throws at the Gorn or the one where the giant boulder?
So what he's talking about is Vasquez Rocks, where they filmed everything. They filmed a Michael Jackson black or white video there. I found out they filmed part of Tom Petty's music video there. But me and this guy we met walking around, this guy picks up a rock and he's like, hey, I gotta take this rock and take it back to my son-in-law because I can just see it in the divorce. It's gonna come down to the argument about the Gorn Rock. But I didn't realize it until we did the podcast that I was out there, I was trying to line up the shot, the guy was hanging around with us. So me and this guy, it wasn't an argument, but it was a discussion, and Mike's just observing this whole thing. It's actually a very good podcast. We did talking about it.
Oh, okay. So you guys are having an argument where they filmed Arena,
the fight of Gorn.
Yeah. The fight with Gorn. Yeah, yes. The episode Arena. Yeah, but it was just like somebody decided he thought he found the Gorn Rock, and was going to facetiously use it in the divorce.
That's what he said when we met him. But then back out because I was lining up shots out in the parking lot area.
Okay,
right.
But it was just
the big nerd was finding little tinsels and stuff. And hey, this was on the set 60 years ago. This was left. It just happened to appear overnight. Oh, this was hilarious. I think the guy overheard some of this stuff.
I swear
and then he
God,
says, hey, this is a gore rock.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that rock was fake.
No, the rock made me think, but I swear to God, I found part of the set dressing in the tinsel that they put back behind that was buried. It looks like gum wrapper, but it's not gum wrapper.
But it was 60 years ago.
That's got to be 1966.
Yeah, okay,
50 years ago.
But still, that's got to be left there.
And to me,
with
you,
fires,
you never
hurricanes,
know.
Rain, hurricanes,
this is
whatever.
California.
It's my word against yours.
Yeah, okay.
Because I found the rock that he hit, the stick that he hit him with.
And that's, here we go, the stick too. And you found the burning bush for Moses and the Ten Commandments filmed up there too. That's why the guy picked it up. He said, if this guy's a nerd, I could be a nerd. I found a rock. That's the funny thing. You see two middle-aged men, I'm going to have a rock for the divorce of my family. No, this is the shot lined up. I'm like, come the fuck on, man.
How do you know that's from the actual trick shoot? It could have been from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I took
there.
The stick and I lined it up with the little nubs where the branches would drill up. This is the one that he goes, bam, hits him with, when he hits Gorn with.
Did you keep this stick?
I still have it, yeah. I swear to God, it is the same stick.
How did you find it, but nobody else found it who visited?
Because
this?
I went out there determined to find it.
And that's just why this guy picked up. He said, this is my rock. If this guy could be a nerd, I could be a nerd.
Wait. Okay, so the guy picked up the rock that he thought was used, and
yes,
you picked up the stick that Kirk used.
Yes.
Okay.
And you see how interesting this was? Two middle-aged men arguing or discussing rocks and sticks from 50-plus years ago?
And you're not geologists. That's amazing. Yeah.
Well, anyway, we went out to Star Trek Generations, and then I took Mike around because he's never been to the Valley
Fire. Wait a second now. Wayne did not get a chance to damage the bridge because it is intact thoroughly. There's nothing you can get off it.
If you know where to go, you go to... I know nobody's going to listen to the podcast who's a Star Trek fan, but... Well, these are the instructions. You go to Elephant Rock.
Mm-hmm.
You drive past Elephant Rock. If you hit the Memorial Cross on the left, you went too far. Turn around, go back, park on the opposite side of the road. Take the hiking trail that's right there. It doesn't look like a hiking trail, right?
Just looks like the wash, you know, like an actual wash of the desert.
You start hiking, and you maybe go a football field. That's 100 yards or 100 meters. And then lo and behold, bam, you hit the bridge that was right there that they used. They kept it there. And what's funny is a lot of people don't know, if you go up to the hiking area known as Mouse Tank, there used to be a wash there that they had a second bridge over, but they have backfilled it with all the sand, so you could only see about 15% of the bridge sticking out. Take that, Star Trek fans. But what we did is we went on the bridge and we filmed scenes with the pen, taking turns, that we're going to edit in later, which I haven't done yet. And it's going to be with that part of the movie, so we can get our own little 15-second clip where McDowell goes, "Who the hell are you?" And then I had to do three takes on Mike because he kept calling Soren Thor.
Thor?
That's okay. Now, wait a second. I got a better one than this. Last year and a half ago, we go to California to see the monkeys. Before that, before the renovation of the Brady House.
Yes, 6 months before.
Wayne is actually lining up satellite photos of the crack in the street where the pipe comes out, where the crack is. That way you know it's exactly where it was located. This is what middle-aged men do. Isn't that something? Aren't you glad you're a millennial?
Yeah, you'd like my friend James Gillette. I'd really have to introduce you. He found... There's literally a picture of this, and it's unbelievable because he actually hurt himself. But he found, like, the hill and the rock formation just under, Devil's Tower for Close Encounters of the Third Kind when Richard Dreyfuss goes up and he's talking about where to go and the helicopters in the frame. He actually got up there and he fell at some point because he was trying to take a picture at night to get the stars so he could get, like, a really cool atmospheric Spielberg light shot. And he had talked about how he hurt himself, and I was like, why are you climbing on top of a rock in the middle of the night? And he's like, because I want to get the shot. And I was like, you guys would get along so well. I mean, he just found the stairs from Joker just so he can get a picture of himself where Joaquin Phoenix danced down the stairs.
Oh, God, it is totally popular, the Joker dancing stairs.
Yeah, yeah, like he found that. And I was like, I bet he found the Exorcist stairs. I bet he found the stairs Rocky runs up and down. That's an easy one. I bet he found the stairs of, I'm trying to think of other famous stairs in movies.
Stairway to Heaven.
Stairway to Heaven, okay.
There's the nonsense I could find in Free Willy from Portland.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so funny. I never saw it, but my parents saw it, and they said, like, how the kid is going to go feed the whale. Okay, the whale is down at the coast. He's riding his bike over a bridge, and he shows up, like, 20 minutes later. Well, yeah, but it's 60 miles away down to the coast.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of geographical things like that that make no sense. I live near an area where they filmed Pay It Forward, and there's a shot from, like, a helicopter where it's either Haley Joel Osment or his stand-in going down a road, and that road is literally a block away from where my parents live. Now, when they filmed on that road, there were no houses there at the time. So he goes down this road, and they must have just found it because it's kind of a hill, and they could get a shot of Vegas. But then all of a sudden, the next shot that the director got and edited together is Haley Joel Osment driving or riding past the Luxor. You're like, that's impossible. Why isn't, like, a 10-year-old kid, 11-year-old kid going from that many miles? Like, what is that? Like, 10 miles? 15 miles? Like, all the way from there to there? And you're like, what the hell, you know? But it's not as bad as, like, watching Showgirls, where all of a sudden there's a shot of Elizabeth Berkley, and she's on a cliff,
yeah,
and the Luxor's there. What cliff? Like, what kind of nonsense is that?
Oh,
there's no cliff. Rocky Cliff for somebody to get up on and dangle their feet over the locks.
Yeah, that was. I think that ended her career because she was saved by the bell. That was it. She was cut. Like, it was like it was supposed to be.
Every nerd went and saw Showgirls because I'm going to see Jesse.
It was supposed to be her I'm sexy Miley Cyrus phase, is what I think right now. And it's kind of like all of a sudden this movie's so awful that almost everybody involved in it had to, like, go backwards and find, like, some kind of safe movie to immediately do, because it's that movie, the director of RoboCop and Total Recall and Basic Instinct. That was the movie he did and just messed up for us.
I gotta push this on. So
keep going.
We went to the gully where the bridge is.
Yep.
And then I actually went looking and I found some crystals. And I call these the dilithium crystals.
Dilithium crystals. Nice.
Yeah, and it's like, this is the same stuff I find out at a Lake Mead. And this is some cool shit, because nobody else is going to journey down into this wash because they're afraid of snakes. And I brought them back.
being afraid of snakes is a good thing, though.
Well, the water's going to keep flooding down, and this thing, it's going to get washed away. I have no problem taking it.
Right, well, just, you know, don't fall.
That's it. So, anything else you want to add to the trip?
Just that, there was other group you said that took a picture of Star Trek from one of the fans.
There is a tour that will take fans out there as a Star Trek thing. It will take them to the bridge, so other people will have their pictures taken on the bridge.
But they don't know where your bridge is.
They do know where my bridge is. But
how about your bridge?
Now, the Mouse Tank Bridge, they don't know where that is, but
gotcha.
They know now that I'm
now
telling them.
Gotcha.
That's very similar.
That bridge is buried under the sand.
When we did the James Bond tour, there was a convention here with Bond fans, and we were going around Diamonds Are Forever locations. And this is 1971 when that movie was filmed. We went to locations that some Bond fans didn't even know where they were. But the guy who organized it figured it out because he did something similar to you. He literally was looking at, like, Google Earth, and he was, like, trying to figure out where the mountains were from the shots so he could figure out where it was. So don't worry. He's not completely crazy. He's just in the below the top tier of crazy. So he's just like, because we went out to Lake Mead and we found places, because in that movie they had a moon buggy that's kind of going through the Mojave Desert, and the Willard White security guys are going after it, and they're falling down cliffs and falling into little gullies, and the moon buggy's fine because it's supposed to be designed for the moon and, like, rough terrain. And it's hilarious because now when you go to those areas, you know, there's things there that weren't there before in 1971, like power lines, and there was a part where it was a construction site, and in the movie they put down pipes. And then it occurred to me when I asked the guy, Matt Sherman, the organizer, I said, okay, that was real. What the hell were those pipes for? And he's like, it's probably something to do with the lake. But nobody remembers that stuff anymore because that's 1971.
Way back.
That is probably in use. And when Cubby Broccoli, the producer, and Harry Saltzman, the producer, were looking for weird places to put Bond in, and the bad guys stick him in a pipe so they could bury him alive, that must have been something they saw on tour and was like, that's weird. What if somebody got buried alive at a construction site in Vegas? Which is terrifying because we do have construction sites.
And that happens
still.
Going back to Casino, the movie, that happens all the time.
Oh, yeah. The classic Scorsese Casino. But, I mean, that being similar to the Star Trek Generations thing, like, you could go to places around town. Like, they obviously filmed at Circus Circus. They filmed in Fremont. Those are very obvious. But if you're trying to find the exact gas station where Sean Connery and Jill St. John are distracting somebody to get into a van, you have to know that that is where, in the movie, it's a Shell station? I think it's a Shell station. But now it's an Arco, and it's right on Paradise and what used to be Riviera, but now is Elvis Presley. So it's right there. Now, I knew that.
Is that an AM, PM?
Yeah, there's an AM, PM there.
And the reason,
yeah, they film there. And the reason why people get confused is because the convention center behind it doesn't look like that anymore. Because in the shot, going back to the Beatles, is the dome where the Beatles performed. And when they went to Vegas. But that's not there anymore because they remodeled the convention center and it doesn't look like that. So unless you know where that gas station is and you know that that is Paradise, you would never, because the other thing that's gone that used to be a mark is the landmark. That's not there anymore. That's a parking lot. So all those things you wouldn't know unless you were looking in the right spots and you knew that that Shell station is now an Arco. Because the gas station's still there.
Interesting.
Yeah, stuff like that. Like, same thing with the Star Trek Generations. You don't know it's there unless you look.
It's like Silica Ridge. You gotta know, you gotta go to Silica Ridge, and then you gotta hike. Mike, you gotta hike? You gotta hike.
A turnpike. Let's get to the Beatles.
I kept trying to transition to the Beatles, and everything keeps going back to showgirls.
We need to catch up a little bit on some stuff. Here is the Beatles Uniquities podcast number 428. Jersey Mike picked three songs. I picked three songs. We're doing them alphabetical order, no particular order, but alphabetical order, okay?
I didn't get to pick three songs.
Well, if the next time you can, you will be here and you will pick three songs.
But we don't know because you're always spotting locations, like in Phoenix, you're going back to, where are you going, Martha's Vineyard? Nobody can keep up with you. Is this personal, or is this like creative for movie? I was in the
Valley of the Sun. Here comes the sun. Ding, 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 ding. You know, there we go.
So, the first song, Hollywood Jersey Mike picked out, Hard Day's Night. Why did you pick this song?
Because the other night, it was a hard night, and it was like a day, remember, with mannequins?
You are right, it was a hard day's night for working.
I thought he was going to get sexual, but he was actually very tame when he said that.
Okay, Greg.
Yes?
Hard Day's Night, what's your influences or thoughts about it?
Well, I always think about the movie, the Richard Lester movie. It's a great movie. It's a great album. I like that album a lot. I think, because the funny thing about A Hard Day's Night is not only do I think about the Beatles running away from girls and occasional boys, if you watch that that scene, but I just think about the fact that also Ringo came up with that title. Like, that's a really cool piece of trivia. Oh, it's giving me more wine, but basically, yeah, that was just one of those things that Ringo figured that out, so that's a great title.
Well, that's what I got in here. Ringo said in 1964 interview, we went to do a job, and we worked all day, and we happened to work all night. I came up still thinking it was day. I suppose I said, it's been a hard ... And looking around, I saw it was dark. So I said, night? So we came around to A Hard Day's Night, which absolutely explains a swing shift, graveyard shift.
Hard Day's Night. It explains you losing sight of time.
So what I've got here is not the usual version that you're interested in. What this is someone who took the track and basically isolated the vocals, which is really cool because you can hear Paul McCartney a little bit better as he teams up double vocaling with John Lennon with a little bit of instrumental bleed.
It's one of those proofs that they actually could sing.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah, and this is not something that was on the Anthology collection. So here is isolated vocals with instrumental bleed, Hard Day's Night.
It's been a hard day's night, and I've been working like a dog. It's been a hard day's night, I should be sleeping like a log. But when I get home to you, I find the things that you do will make me feel alright. You know I work all day to get your money to buy a thing, and it's worth it just to hear you say you're gonna give me everything. So why on earth should I moan? 'Cause when I get you alone, you know I feel okay. When I'm home, everything seems to be right. When I'm home, feeling you holding me tight, tight, yeah. It's been a hard day's night, and I've been working like a dog. It's been a hard day's night, I should be sleeping like a log. But when I get home to you, I find the things that you do will make me feel alright. Ow! So why on earth should I moan? 'Cause when I get you alone, you know I feel okay. When I'm home, everything seems to be right. When I'm home, feeling you holding me tight, tight, yeah. Oh, it's been a hard day's night, and I've been working like a dog. It's been a hard day's night, I should be sleeping like a log. But when I get home to you, I find the things that you do will make me feel alright. You know I feel alright. You know I feel alright.
Unedited, isolated vocals, instrumental bleed, Hard Day's Night. What do you think?
Passed it to our guest.
Passed it to the guest.
Oh, well, Paul is a really great vocalist. You can tell how talented he is. He gets it from his father, who was a pianist. So I think that was something that Paul said pretty recently when he was talking about why Beatles songs came to him so naturally for him and John. Because not only did they work really well together when they got along, but the fact that a lot of the style that he was like really interested in that became the Beatles sound was just kind of like things he heard his dad do. Like he was on the piano and his dad would just go da 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 da, and for some reason that bled into him. So he always remembered that kind of sound. So that if he was practicing his guitar in the bog, as he called it, which is the bathroom, he'd just basically like, you know, everything sounds better, better in the bog, you know, stuff like that. You know, there's a video of him with James Corden doing that, and it's really great. You know, he literally was like coming up with like all like Beatles hits where he was just sitting in the bathroom thinking, how did this sound? Which is kind of amazing. You have to remember, he was a kid. He was like 19, 18 years old. Yeah. So he's just thinking about this, and he's still at his parents' house. Because when he thought about like when he does like woke up out of bed, you know, dragged a comb across my head, he's just thinking about stuff that he did when he woke up in the morning, you know. So that's just, you know, that's the genius of those guys. They just were hanging around town and they're like, oh, Penny Lane, I'm gonna make a song about Penny Lane, you know, stuff like that.
If you've never seen Hard Day's Night, I'm gonna put it in the link in the description down below. You can actually go watch Hard Day's Night for free on Daily Motion.
Mm-hmm.
Link in the description. Have you ever seen Hard Day's Night?
Long, long, long time ago.
Oh, impression?
It's Beatles. How can't you like it?
It's an excellent movie.
There's something different. It's like watching Dumb and Dumber every time, because I love the jokes, the inside jokes that they tell to each other.
Right.
And I catch more and more every time I see it, no matter what.
It's probably one of the better examples of a movie where they're obviously just trying to highlight a singer artist so that, you know, people will watch it and go, oh, here's your favorite, you know, singers, artists, musicians, and this is how you can get to know them. But do it in a way where it's comedic. Because when Elvis first started doing that with, like, Jailhouse Rock, it was more dramatic. And then he kind of slowly went into more, like, funnier stuff, like Roundabout or, like, Blue Hawaii. But with the Beatles, because they had Richard Lester as the director, there's, like, really funny sight gags. Like, I love the scene where John Lennon is in the bathtub, and then the manager's going to find him, and he can't find him. And then he's outside the bathtub already. He's, like, right there. And you're like, how the hell did he do that? But it's so funny.
There is so much in there to catch every time. There's more and more every time you watch it.
Going back to Ringo, one of my favorite things is that when Ringo used to keep time, and you see it in Hard Day's Night, because I think Richard Lester must have thought it was funny. There's another Richard Lester story that I love. But Ringo used to, in case he couldn't hear himself, he'd just look at John Lennon's ass. So there's a shot of from the back of just John Lennon doing this, and now you go, that's what Ringo was looking at. He was looking at John Lennon's ass. And then there's another thing that is one of my other favorite stories when they were making A Hard Day's Night. I think it was A Hard Day's Night. Could have been Help, but I'm pretty sure it was A Hard Day's Night. Was Paul was starting to write Yesterday, but he didn't know what it was about yet. So he literally was making it about breakfast. So he was like, scrambled eggs, you know, want that on my piece of toast? You know, something like butter and all the cream and, you know, roast or something like that. And Richard Lester was like, that's really, like, kind of silly. Can you, like, make it about something more important? And somehow that became Yesterday. Because the director liked hearing it, but he hated the lyrics. So, little funny pieces of trivia.
Yeah,
because
I remember seeing clips of Yesterday when I was very young. And it was just, like, one of those things where you just pass through it, you're flipping channels. But then it wasn't until years later I saw it again and realized, oh, that's what it was I saw when I was 4 years old.
Yeah, for some reason when I was a kid, the thing that I always remembered was, hey, grandfather's very clean.
Yes.
I always remember that, because I thought, so that's like, a very weird thing to say. Like, what? Like, he's so clean. It's like, huh?
Okay, so moving into our next song, this is the one I picked, I'm Only Sleeping, from 1966. It was the first pop song ever to use backwards or backmasking lead guitar part played by George Harrison. There are about five different mixes of it between the UK and the US releases, between the US stereo and the mono and everything. Have you heard I'm Only Sleeping?
You're going to find out.
Have you heard I'm Only Sleeping?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of Beatles songs. It's not my favorite George Harrison song, but I really love George Harrison stuff. I love Something. That's probably my all-time favorite George Harrison supervised song. And then after that is probably Here Comes the Sun, which is apparently George Martin's favorite song that the Beatles ever did. I'm not sure why, but I guess he must have liked the aesthetic. And I like When My Guitar Gently Weeps. I like that one too a lot. So maybe that's number four.
So here, this is what I believe is from the Anthology 2, but you're not going to hear this version on the Anthology 2, because what I did at the very beginning, you got the sound engineer commenting, I upped the audio on that so you can hear him. It's the unedited acoustic rehearsal. Squirrel version.
I'm only sleeping, take one. When I wake up early in the morning, lift my head, I'm still yawning. When I'm in the middle of a dream, shake me, leave me where I am, I'm only sleeping. Everybody seems to think I'm lazy, I don't mind, I think they're crazy. Running everywhere at such a speed, till they find that there's no need, there's no need. Don't spoil my day, I'm miles away, and after all, I'm only sleeping. Keeping an eye on the world going by my window, taking my time, lying here instead.
ceiling, waiting for the sleepy feeling. Please don't wake me, no, don't shake me, leave me where I am, I'm only sleeping. Lying here staring at the ceiling, waiting for a sleepy feeling. Please don't spoil my day, I'm miles away, and after all, I'm only sleeping.
That was I'm Only Sleeping, take one. So I would say I love the studio. You were saying, is that Paul? And I said, I'm not for sure.
I'm not for sure, but for sure. I say that all the time. But, I mean, Paul makes weird voices all the time in a lot of his songs. Like Uncle Albert is in the wings. Yeah, he's just like, oh, Uncle Albert. We don't know what he's doing all day. You know, he does weird things like that. And there's also other Beatles songs where you hear, like, a weird voice. And I'm trying to think of one right now. Like, you'll hear some kind of... Like, I feel like... What's that song? I can't even think of it right now. But it's just like, you'll hear like, people will know when you hear, when you watch, you'll listen to a song and you'll hear like a weird voice. It's probably Paul because he was really good at just manipulating his voice. You could watch him on any like video on YouTube where he does a joke with Jimmy Fallon where he trades accents with Jimmy Fallon. And he does a very convincing American accent. He's really good at that stuff.
He is.
Yeah.
I'm Only Sleeping, I picked that song because it's one of those songs that somebody else will get you hooked on or make you aware of it. And I remember I was just getting into college and I was working nights at a place that was a mailing room. And there was a lady there and she was telling me, the lady would work swing shift, her husband worked graveyard. And she was telling me how they would go to Tower Records, got Tower Records connection, and they would buy vinyl. And they got my attention, but I'm talking about that. Mm. But then she was saying how when they're working different shifts and how she would go to wake up her husband and he would be like, I'm only sleeping. And that was a reference to the song there, and I had to check it out. It's like, so now whenever I'm in that mode of just sleeping, I'm only sleeping. You know, it makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. You know, talking about albums and vinyl and stuff, do you remember the original Beatles album that everybody was looking for because it was like, under the cover was like slain babies' heads or something?
The butcher cover.
Yes. That's like worth millions of dollars. People like can't find too many of them. They were stamped over with that because they were shocked about that.
Thousands of dollars, but not millions. But yes, yes. It's still, you can still find them out there somewhere.
Yeah, because what they do, they just transpose that. If you pull it off, then there's like,
yes,
kids' headless,
you,
right?
You can pull. Well, it's the picture where they're wearing butcher smocks, and they got baby parts. Thoughts on that butcher cover?
I was only thinking about why don't we do it in the road? I was just thinking about why don't you do it in the road? And I thought, okay, there we go. There's a weird voice. I literally was like going through my brain trying to figure that one out.
Okay, so our next song is Let It Be, picked by Mike. Why did you pick the Paul song, Let It Be?
Just love this thing, Let It Be. Like today's world, just let it be. Nobody can just let it be anymore.
Do you know that's about his mom?
No.
He had a dream after, because his mom died when he was young, and he had a dream of his mother showed up in it, and she said, don't worry about it, just let it be. And he remembered that when he woke up. He was like, what's that about?
It is so cool when you state facts that I have written down that I haven't even got to yet.
Because,
it's so perfect.
Because I like that. Actually, like,
I like that.
Know stuff like this. Because then you don't have to work very hard to introduce it. I already just said it. And well, no, I didn't read the paper. I already knew that.
I know, because he
just said it. Oh, I can't read your handwriting for shit. But but I mean, like, you know, it's a great song. Yeah. It's an amazing song because it's very inspirational. There is a gossip version of that for the movie Across the Universe. So, which is a really great Beatles tribute movie, pretty much for millennials. I mean, it stars millennial actors. And the idea of that movie, if you haven't seen it, it came out in 2007. I saw it in the theater when I was growing up. And basically, it's kind of like a Paul-like type guy.
I know Bono had a part in it.
Yeah, he sings, I Am the Walrus, exactly. So he it's like these young people growing up in the time of the Beatles, but the Beatles don't like necessarily exist, just like that movie Yesterday. It's almost like they're singing songs and it's coming out of their minds, like it's coming out of their like souls. And these people kind of represent like Beatles type people, but they're like growing up through Vietnam and they're growing up through the Civil Rights Movement and they're growing up through things like the best way to describe it is just not only is it anti-establishment, but it's kind of like how young people in that time period knew how to not only either they were hippies or they were like, you know, like revolutionaries, or they were like people that just wanted to be artists. They just wanted to make music at the time. You know, it's a really good movie for that. I've always liked
it. I got to check it out.
Yeah, man. It's directed by Julie Taymor. She directed Titus with Anthony Hopkins.
And
Frida with Salma Hayek. Even Salma Hayek has a small part in that. She shows up in Happiness as a Warm Gun.
You just say those two words. Salma Hayek. Got our attention.
Yeah, got your attention. Yeah, Salma Hayek's in it. She shows up in a dream sequence.
I need to give credit where who gave us this, who requested this for this podcast. Another listener in Brazil named Caroline asked that we do a podcast on the Beatles. So that's why we're doing it. So these are the facts I got down for Let It Be. The Mother Mary lyric line refers to his mom, who mm-hmm. died of cancer when he was 14.
Mm-hmm.
That's heavy right there. Okay?
She's so heavy!
There are literally hundreds of variations of the song Let It Be between rehearsals, studio takes. It just goes on and on because of so many. I heard there was something like 96 takes that Paul did of Let It Be trying to get it right when they were doing the recording of it. Okay? Right. Some versions you will hear him say Brother Malcolm. It refers to Mal Evans, the assistant to the Beatles, who they met at the Cavern Club when he worked as a bouncer. Worked with them until 1970. This guy could have a movie done about him because he died in Los Angeles when he was shot by a policeman by mistake. He was mistakenly carrying an air rifle that was thought to be a rifle. He was 40. That could be a movie right there, another day. He had a dream of his mother, and she said to him, "It'll be all right, let it be," as Greg said before. So, this is a version. I got two things here for Let It Be. Normally considered a Paul song, but it's I got a John Lennon clip doing something with Let It Be. It's about 30 seconds long. It's like something he could have done on Sesame Street, or should have been on Sesame Street. Let It A, Let It B, Let It C, Let It D. I thought it was fake, but you watch it carefully, and it is real. Here it is.
Words of wisdom, let it be, H-I-J-K. Let it A, let it B, let it C, let it D, let it F, G, H, I, K, double wobble wobble U, G.
Okay, one, two.
Okay, I had to add that clip because it was just so cool to see John Lennon doing something with Let It Be.
Right. That's a good example of John Lennon's love of nonsensical lyrics, because there's a story right there. There was a kid who was doing an essay on Beatles music, and at some point, I can't remember how John Lennon found out about it, but he found out about this kid doing research on them, and he was trying to find out the meaning of a lot of their lyrics. So for some reason, John Lennon interpreted that as, I need to start making more songs that make no sense. So that's where I Am the Walrus came from, because a lot of that stuff, you're like, what does that mean? So here he is doing, like, you know, he's just doing the alphabet and, you know, being silly and goofy and having a good time. But it's a good example of just like, it sounds really pretty when he sings it like that, but at the same time, it doesn't quite make a certain amount of sense. It's kind of like listening
totally
to...
It sounds like a Sesame Street
audition. But at the same time, you know, you listen to Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, and, you know, whether that's about LSD or not, you know, that's always about the debate. At the same time, you hear just, like, very pretty, like, marmalade skies, and you're hearing these things that just sound really pretty put next to each other. But, you know, Come Together doesn't really make any sense at all.
Yeah.
But it's a great sounding song. But he got very fascinated with songs that were kind of somewhat nonsensical.
Yeah. All right, so here we have, this is just one of the many outtakes of Let It Be. You can hear Paul doing a variety of different testing of the voices.
When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. And in my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. Let it be, let it be, let it be. Let it be. Whisper words of wisdom. Let it be. When all the broken-hearted people living in the world agree, there will be an answer. Let it be. For though they may be parted, there is still a chance that they will see. Let it be. Oh, let it be. Let it be. Let it be. Let it be. Whisper words of wisdom. Let it be. Yeah, let it be. Let it be. Let it be. Let it be. There will be an answer. Let it be. In times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. And in my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be.
Okay, so our version of Which Is an Outtake, what do you think of Let It Be?
Right on.
It's always beautiful to hear people kind of practicing and figuring out how it works. Like, there's an old joke, Paul says that Hey Jude was originally supposed to be called Hey Dude. That's always, I've always liked that, because that's just
they
funny.
Make an, they make a joke about that in Yesterday, the movie.
Yeah, yeah, of course. And which, but
wouldn't it be better with Hey Dude?
But I think most people, yeah, most people, well, now, because it's just such a surfer term, but I think Hey Jude was mostly about Julian. So,
yeah, I was just going to say, didn't they say they couldn't pronounce his name? He was Jude or something.
Well, I think it had something to do with the fact that John was never much of a family guy, because his dad was never around. He met him like one time, I think, when they were making Hard Day's Night, and then he never wanted to see him ever again. So with his sons, he was never around. Like, there's a whole thing about that. You could ask Julian and Christian that about their father. And
Paul went to went to check on
to Julian. Check on him.
Hey,
and
Jules, it'll be okay.
Yeah, and he wrote a song about him and kind of changed the name slightly.
Yeah.
Because Paul was a lot more of a loving guy, I think, because he had his parents around. I mean, they both had deaths in the family. They both lost
both
their moms.
Moms, yeah.
That's probably one of the reasons they connected.
That is it.
But yeah. John was much more of a sour at the whole thing than Paul, because Paul was more of the optimist, have fun kind of guy, and which has pretty much helped his career pretty much for his entire life. But John was more of the I have to fight back, and I have to be the social justice warrior, and like the whole bagism thing is probably one of the weirdest things you can ever read about. Putting a bag over your head, and him and Yoko being naked and protesting, something weird like the racism or something. I don't know what the reason was, but that's one of those John things where you're just like, that's John. I love John's songs. Not sure, he was like, the greatest dad is what I'll say. So, but
true.
That's really up to his sons and Yoko to talk about.
So, the next song was one I picked, Obladee Oblada.
My dad's favorite Beatles song. He bought the whole White Album just to get that song.
Yeah.
Because he loved how it was just cute. It made him happy.
Well, all right, so do you know what it's from?
Not really. I don't know that much about that song, actually.
Here it is. It was Paul McCartney got it from a Nigerian Congo player named Jimmy Scott. Impkwa. I'm sorry if I mispronounced your last name, Mr. Impkwa, who claimed it as a family expression and never given writing credit for it, because Paul heard him say it, which he gave up. In 1969, at the request that Mr. Jimmy Scott had Paul pay some of his legal bills for a missed payment to an ex-wife, which happened under the condition that he give up any rights to it.
Hmm.
So Paul kind of finagled a little obladee oblada through there.
Yeah, I suppose that's why Michael Jackson's showing up and doing that is kind of like scary irony, I suppose.
So I always liked obladee oblada. I didn't really care. I mean, I was aware of it. But then when the Lion King's Hakuna Matata came out, those two, it was just like, obladee oblada, Hakuna Matata. Those two songs should be played back-to-back on FM radio on Monday morning.
That's
fun,
yeah.
This is not what you hear on the radio. This is what's known as the Escher Demo or Demos. It's mostly acoustic. It's a recording from Escher, England, where George had a house in Escher, England. The Beatles gathered together before the White Album and were basically playing acoustic versions of the demos. They are wonderful. If you can find them on YouTube and they're out there, go get them. Maybe I'll put it in the link. But here is the Escher Demo of Obladee Oblada.
Marketplace, Molly's, they sing her in a band. There she's a laughter in the marketplace. Desmond lets the children lend a hand. Mommy stays at home and does a pretty face. And in the evening she still sings it with a band.
Okay, Obladi Oblada, the Escher demo. What do you think?
Love that one, especially, like, you know, it's just like mellow. Like, how would you think somebody's going to make a song like Oreo Cookie or something? That's what it sounds like. Something,
yeah.
Obladi Oblada, okay. But because they're the Beatles, it's famous, so it's cool.
And you listen to the other Escher demos that they did that are out there. I'll link them in the description of the podcast. They are great. Because it's not what you would normally deal with what's going on with a White Album, which is kind of dark.
Mm.
Yes? No?
Maybe? Yeah, no, I agree. It's one of their more experimental things.
Yes. All right, so anything else to say about Obladi Oblada, Hakuna Matata?
It feels like the opposite of Helter Skelter for some reason. Like, Obladi Oblada is like you going to the playground and jumping up and down and going on the jungle gyms. You know, it's kind of like one of those things.
Yeah.
Just being really cute. And then he goes up at the top of the slide and he just goes, Helter Skelter! And you're just like, and now you're like losing your mind, falling off the playground.
Oh, that's so true. So, next one was one I picked going alphabetical order. I picked a George Harrison solo song from 1989, When We Was Fab.
Oh, okay.
It fits in.
You're getting to the Traveling Wilburys era.
Yes, mm-hmm. And there's like four different versions. There's the extended, this is George Harrison humor, unextended version.
Unextended?
Yeah, there's the reverse mix version. There's about four of them. But what I picked here was the music video audio take on it, okay? You got to watch in it because Ringo makes an appearance and he acts as the assistant.
Oh, wow.
George is up against a wall, and he's like a busker. Watching the video, you will see Elton John. You're going to see Jeff Lynne. You're going to see their old road manager, Neil Aspin, walk by, and he's holding a copy of John Lennon's 1971 Imagine album.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I missed it. I haven't looked. I haven't seen it yet. Paul Simon is in it as well. Okay? Now, also, there is a person in the walrus suit. At the time, George asked Paul, would you come be in the walrus suit? Paul was busy. He couldn't make it, but he said, go ahead and tell people that I am in the walrus suit. So they were trying to do a Beatles reunion, but it never happened. So Paul is technically, you have my blessings to say this.
He's there in spirit.
Yeah. And there are so many little Beatles Easter eggs in here because you'll see George up against the wall and he's into the Indian transcendental meditations. He's got eight arms. You'll see an apple come out. You gotta watch for him. Okay, so here we go. Here is When We Was Fab, the music video.
Morning light. Yeah. casualties at dawn. That magnified the tears studied once and all. Still alive for all and all. Oh, long time ago when we was fat, but it's all over now, baby.
Okay, When We Was Fab. Hollywood Mike, what do you think?
Just love all the old people that pop in and makes me feel like I'm 19 again.
Gregor.
That's one of my top favorite George Harrison's. It's right up there with My Sweet Lord. But I think the coolest thing is that I think every Beatle loved doing those celebrity-like cameos almost.
Yes.
Like things. Because if you look at Band on the Run, you got Christopher Lee and James Coburn on like that cover, which I've always thought was really cool. What else? There was another thing that was kind of like that. Like, I mean, the fact that Paul Simon was in there just made me think of Paul Simon just throwing Chevy Chase in his music video.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of those things it's rubbing off on people now. Like, they got to do this sort of thing. But of course, the Chevy Chase thing is like, hey, I miss Garfunkel. I'll get Chevy Chase.
Yeah.
I'm just going to put another tall guy in it.
I mean, that song, the video was definitely visionally before MTV went.
Oh, yeah. Back when MTV was actually about music.
Yeah, and visually,
yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Man on the Moon flag. Remember that one? I used to have all the different stuff on the real MTV.
Oh, yeah.
It's weird because I grew up when MTV sucked, so it's just kind of a weird thing.
No,
What year is that?
Put an ear on it. What year did it suck?
Oh, 2000s? Late 90s, maybe?
It sucked, right?
I didn't even know it existed anymore.
Well, I mean, the things that are on MTV now that I think of when I thought of growing up was like The Real World. And I thought of things like Total Request Live with Carson Daly. I remember that. And now, like, if you want to watch something, it's like Scream the Series. Like, I just watched season 3, but I didn't even watch it on MTV. I watched it on Netflix. But it's an MTV-produced show. So it's just kind of like, oh, I know something that was actually good on MTV. Silent Library. That's a good show. That was hilarious.
The DJs, I can't name them all. Let me see. Martha Quinn.
The one I liked was Randy of the Redwoods, man. But you never hear Randy Woods.
Martha Quinn. Who else was it? Anita Blackwood. Mark Goodman. I forget the blonde-haired guy.
The comedian guy.
Yeah, I think it's blonde hair because Mark Goodman had dark hair, if I'm not mistaken.
No. Jeez, this is bad that I can't remember this guy.
Because it was four original DJs.
He did the move, yeah, but later on then also came on The Crazy Guy, yeah.
I mean, the four original
guys. What was his name? Yeah, the original guys, but what?
I don't remember, but I just remember.
But he did the movie Biodome.
Oh, with Pauly Shore.
Pauly Shore, thank you.
Oh, there you go.
But he's not one of the original videos.
Not one of the originals, no.
Because you remember growing up, you weren't even born, I think, in 1982, 83.
No.
You remember that? They had, like, the flag. Then it was, like, then they put, like, different stuff. Nah. That's when videos were videos. Now we have Springsteen. Now we have Madonna, Michael Jackson.
YouTube.
You know what I'm saying? That was
Genesis.
That was, yeah. That was our time. Oh, well.
That's another podcast.
Yes.
So.
We're Generation X. Or what are we now?
So, the last...
Generation X. Okay. You guys were born in the 70s, right?
Yeah.
Sure, why not?
Oh, okay. We were born in the 70s. You're as old as Shari, right? Like, late 60s? Is that what we were...
1966.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're a Generation Xer. Yeah, that fits. Yep. Yeah.
So, the last song of our podcast, Jersey Hollywood Mike. I'm going to nail that on you because my mom said, you see that pillow over there? My mom made that pillowcase for him in the studio because he wants to go to Hollywood.
Time to go.
I always think of Jersey Mike subs. I always think about that.
So Hollywood.
Hey, listen,
Jersey
if I can
Mike.
Catch that promo and be known for that and make the money, who cares? Because what's his name? God rest his soul. Remember Art Lynch?
Art Lynch, yeah.
He said, at your age, it doesn't matter what you get. Just get the part and get it and get it. Don't care if you're typecast, whatever, you get it. My favorite person to talk about nowadays is Flo. Progressive Insurance. How many dozens of commercials did she get? And she hates it because she was a theater actress.
She still does it.
Yes. And she's got bought out. She can't be nobody's image or anything for $2 million. That's it. They own her.
Yeah, it's like one of those things.
Well, that, you like somebody to buy you out and say, Gregor, you're going to be Gregor dressed as you are the rest of 10 years. Here's $2 million.
Well, it's like Jay and Silent Bob. Yeah. That is what they are.
Yes.
Well, just play around with it. You never know what's going to happen. There's a joke that I've always liked that was like, there's a clown, and he's doing a... They've done it in multiple movies, the same joke. So there's a clown, he's entertaining kids, and basically he's having an interior monologue or something, or he's thinking in a thought bubble, and it says, 4 years of acting class for this. But... he's making money somehow.
Who cares? Well, you're a director. People want to get into your movies and stuff. So eventually, one day when you're high on the charts, like the Guy Ritchies and all the good directors.
But the charts, I got to bring this up. Dolly Parton got number one on the dance music charts. She only sold 4,000 copies.
Wow!
Around the world, she teamed up with some DJs or something. But that just Anyway, that's another podcast. You picked Yellow Submarine. Why?
How can't you love that? We all live in the Yellow Submarine. Isn't that like life? We're all supposed to get along. Doesn't matter what kind of class you come from or whatever. It doesn't work like that, but it's all supposed to be just like under the water, enjoying life. Just look, here comes an octopus at you. Here comes this. Just enjoy.
Octopus's garden. Yes.
And when did you first see Yellow Submarine?
I don't know, 72, 73, when I was two or three. Had to be. That's when everything was like...
Yeah, because I probably saw it about maybe 1976, and what was funny was...
It was
our Japanese kid neighbor named Brucey who came over and told us, like, you want to come over and watch Nowhere Man with me? That's what he called it. And so we went over, me and my brother went over and watched it, and it was just like, whoa, what is this animation?
Yeah, it's like blows your mind when you're a little kid. You see all this stuff, just like, remember Saturday, they used to call that, oh my gosh, Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys Mysteries on Saturday. There was just some things you had to wake up for. Hanna-Barbera's,
The Hercules!
Exactly. Some stuff you just had to see as a kid. I'm sorry.
All right, Gregor. Yellow Submarine.
Time to blow your guys' mind. I finally saw that movie a few months ago. Yeah, I finally got it through Netflix and was like, I'm going to watch Yellow Submarine.
Well, you can see it for free on Daily Motion. Link in the description.
Right. I saw it because I was also watching a lot of more like off-kilter animation. Like I was watching Fantastic Planet. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that one. It's a very weird 70s animated film with and they like raise humans as like pets.
Really?
It's a trippy movie. Like definitely when it was popular in the 70s, it was because people were on drugs watching.
I was just
going to
say.
It was like that, or it's like watching the Ralph Bakshi's movies like Fire and Ice, or like watching heavy metal. It's one of those kind of movies where you're like, what the hell am I looking at?
It's just like watching the movie Rollerball with James Caan. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to think of the other one where they were out shooting a gun, like what it was, a laser futuristic one. That's another one. I'm trying to think.
There's a lot of good ones like that.
Okay, Planet of the Apes, the original series. Who would think that they would come up with something like that?
Again.
Earth destroyed itself. Charleston Heston. God damn, we find, you know what I'm saying? With the Statue of Liberty there. That's ahead of its time.
Yeah, that was a book basically of what if humans destroyed themselves and the next evolved race was, you know, the apes.
Wow.
So I always thought that's always been a very clever idea. And the new movies are pretty good. Rise and Dawn and War. Those are really good. That's a really good new trilogy.
When I first saw Yellow Submarine, I got about... I missed like maybe the first 15% of it because we went back over to our neighbor's house to watch it, me and my brother Doug, and then I just finally watched it again for the first time ever, and it's like, this is still so, because basically it is a time travel movie. Einstein's relativity theory is mentioned twice in it.
And this is when you met Bigfoot, right? You had a Bigfoot
exactly.
experience
Why not?
Somewhere around that time.
Exactly. Why not? So. Yellow Submarine, there are not many rarities or oddities of the Beatles for this track, same as kind of like with Magical Mystery Tour, mm-hmm. which is another podcast, but I found something that's not even on YouTube. It's something that was just done recently as September 8th, 2019. Here's the backstory. George Martin, the producer, did about 7 of these orchestrated tracks for Yellow Submarine.
Mm-hmm.
He did one that was titled Yellow Submarine and Pepperland. Up to this point, nobody, and this is something that I would have done, I would have liked if I had the kind of time, but they have taken Ringo's vocal version mix and mixed it with this orchestrated version that appears in the movie. Nobody's ever done this. So this is what's known. I found it on a podcast. It's called the BDJ's Cellar of Full Remixes.
God, that's a mouthful.
Yes.
Did you ever get to see Ringo Starr and his All-Star Band?
I would love to, but I haven't.
I saw that a long time ago back in Atlantic City. My favorite one was Sheila E. when she did the Glamorous Life.
Yeah.
You know, he just came out banging, she's banging. I mean...
Together they drummed?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's crazy on what it'll come out and do this stuff on stage and everything, man. It's nuts.
Ah, well, so here's the first time you've probably never heard this before. Here is...
was born, lived a man who sailed to sea, and he told us of his life in the land of submarines. So we sailed unto the sun till we found the sea of green, and we lived beneath the waves in our yellow submarine. We all live in a yellow submarine, yellow submarine, yellow submarine. We all live in a yellow submarine, yellow submarine, yellow submarine. And our friends are all aboard, many more of them live next door, and the band begins to play.
We all live in a yellow submarine, yellow submarine, yellow submarine. We all live in a yellow submarine, yellow submarine.
Thank you.
life of ease. Every one of us has all we need. Sky of blue and sea of green in our yellow submarine.
There you have something you've probably never heard before because it's buried in another podcast, but it's here now, giving credit to BDJ Cellars Full of Remixes. Maybe a link in the description. I don't know. What do you think, Gregor?
Well, it's another great example of George Martin just experimenting and seeing how things sound aesthetically pleasing. And it does. It does sound aesthetically pleasing because you can hear his orchestration. He did the orchestrations for Hard Day's Night and Help, and he did Live and Let Die. He was hired to do Live and Let Die since Paul ended up writing the song for the Bond movie Live and Let Die, Roger Moore's first, because John Barry, who was the usual composer, Cubby Broccoli, the producer, had thought, you know, we need to get like the next generation, the hippie generation, to get into this Roger Moore guy. So let's make the score a little bit more hip and a little bit more edgy and a little bit more dirty. Because John Barry was very, you know, like very old school.
It was really dirty. Very, in that sense.
Well, yeah, because that was jazzy. And then it's like, let's take it a step further. What's dirtier than jazz? You know, Paul McCartney going, you know, that like on an overdrive guitar, you know, like a Jimi Hendrix kind of thing that John Lennon also did really well. So it's just kind of like, yeah, that's what the Live and Let Die sound was, because George Martin could do it. Also, and this is the thing that makes it funny, it's the most 70s sounding Bond score other than the Marvin Hamlisch Bee Gees one for A Spy Who Loved Me, because when you hear Live and Let Die, it's like bow chicka wow wow bow 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 chicka wow wow. It's like, it's very,
I've never thought of it that way, but now that you put it that way, I think of it that way now.
Yeah. Once it gets in your head, it won't leave. You'll always remember that.
Last thoughts on Yellow Submarine?
Makes you feel ready for the holidays. It's got that like Christmassy Thanksgiving, just that good feeling. It really makes you feel like, wow.
So thank you, Caroline of Brazil Nerd Podcast listener, for making that suggestion. Have a good evening, everyone.
Yay.